It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 377. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions for suggested show topics or any tech question, and I have a stack of email. You can email me at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have 4 voicemails queued up for today's show. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can visit the wiki to get links to all of the past shows, and that's at mtswiki.com. And of course, this is a special show on a Saturday because I was unable to make the last 2 Thursday nights. And the way to learn when I'm going to be recording live, the best way is to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, because I will tweet what's going on. And we're going to talk about that. I'm going to get a little personal in the beginning of the show and tell you about what happened this past week. You can also follow me on Facebook. Send me a friend request. That's facebook.com/MikeTechShow. I have so much planned because of missing the last 2 Thursday nights. I have a stack of things I want to talk about. Before I get to anything, I want to talk about what happened this past week. And we're going to just get serious for a minute. And I want to share with you what's going on. Let's go back a month. I've been having and experiencing different pains around my chest. And let me tell you, you don't ignore them, and you have chest pain, you go to an emergency room, and it's something that I was not doing. And then Wednesday night, I felt like a house had dropped on the center of my chest. I lost feelings in my right side and my right leg and right arm, and I was taken to the emergency room and treated as I was having a heart attack. It took 3 nitroglycerin tablets to calm the pain down, and they kept me for a couple days observation and ran a battery of tests. I had the stress test, echocardiogram, you name it, they test it. And thank God, I have no heart problem. And I really thought I was having a heart attack on Wednesday. I'm so happy to be here talking about this. I thought, even if it wasn't a heart attack, there's got to be some kind of blockage or something. That's what's causing this, but it was not. We don't know exactly what is happening. I have follow-up visits. It could have been a severe case of acid reflux that caused all of that, but they're worried about still like what's caused the pains and the tingling and loss of sensation on my leg and arm. So I still have follow-ups with doctors, and there's still going to be some more tests, but at least it's not the heart. And that's one of the things that I just wanted to share with you. But I was in the hospital Thursday night, and there was no way that I was able to do a show. But I was feeling good enough, and Ryan brought a laptop up to me, and I was able to post. But I knew I was going to be getting out. I didn't post until they came with the last test results that said I would be getting out. Because there was a chance that on that last test result that if I wasn't getting out, they would have maybe been doing putting a stent in, or maybe I would have had, you know, bypass, you know, surgery. Definitely, I have to change my lifestyle. I am a high risk, certainly, having a heart problem. So I got to take care of myself. I got to do a better job. I got to eat better. I got to exercise more. There's lots of things I got to do. So I wanted to just get that out there. This is what I've been battling the last few weeks in the chat room. Stress. Yes, it has been stressful. There's been a lot of things happening in my life here that's been causing and building up a lot of stress, and certainly that does not help. So we're putting myself on the right path here. Hopefully we're back on track, not missing any more shows, and everything should be good. So with that, I'm feeling great today. And even with all the problems that I had with my setup, with hardware, getting started today was difficult. I had major problems with the mixer communicating with my system. And then it was nasty. It was just ugly. And 7-8 reboots. But finally, ripping out my Mackie mixer driver from my setup, uninstalling it, doing one final reboot, letting the drivers reload, fixed my problem. And now I'm broadcasting, I'm recording, and I'm very happy. So it was stressful an hour ago as I was trying to get this set up and get going. So now, the first thing we want to do is welcome back new sponsor, and that's GoToMeeting. You know I love GoToMeeting. There's no better software for holding an online meeting than GoToMeeting, and I use it all the time. It's so simple to just go to the website, one click, send the link to everybody to set up for the meeting. I love being able to not just present, but the tool set that you have. It's so easy to just hand off the presentation to someone else. When I'm giving the presentation, there's great tools to highlight what you want, and I can show a client that this, I just had a presentation where I was showing a whole new network design for a client, and I was presenting this using GoToMeeting. I can't think of any other product that allows me to so easily close a deal with a client by being able to demonstrate everything. Very glad that GoToMeeting's back, and you can try it free today. You can go to the App Store or on the Android Market and download a free app and start joining and start using GoToMeeting sessions from anywhere. You can host your own meetings with a free 30-day trial. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, click on Try It Free, and that promo code PODCAST, and then you're on your way to seeing how great that software is. I want to talk about, just for a second, you know I don't do current news events a lot, but we can't avoid talking about Steve Jobs passing. It is very sad. And no matter how you feel, and I know there's some people that don't care about Apple, and you know this is a predominantly Windows podcast, but you do know I embrace all of the Apple products and use them on a regular basis alongside with all my Windows systems and servers. This generation has lost a true visionary. And that's what I believe. With all the good, all the bad, anything that you think about Steve Jobs, one thing you cannot deny, he was a true visionary. And we hope that there, whether it's Tim Cook or whoever within Apple, can take the torch and keep that going, because it's really nice to have a company to be proud of like that, that has such great products that are user-friendly and designed so well and look so good. Yes, they cost a lot, but they have a tremendous product. I love the iPhone. I love my MacBook Pro. Now, one of the things that, of course, they've just released and announced the iPhone 4S. I don't understand something. My son and I, yesterday, stopped by the local AT&T store so we could pre-order our 4S. Ryan and I each have the 3GS, so we skipped the 4. So I'm looking forward to go to the 4S, and I'm going to give my 3GS to my wife, who does not have a smartphone, and she is finally jumping on the smartphone bandwagon. She is embracing the technological achievements of the phone, and that is so rare, because when I got my iPhone, she told me, she would never need, nor want, nor desire such a device. Now, she can't wait to get the iPhone in her hands. So she's going to get my 3GS, and then I am going to the 4S. So we get to the Apple, we get to the AT&T store, and the guy says, you know, if you pre-order this, you're not going to get your phones until after the release on the 14th. I said, you got to be kidding me. That doesn't make any sense. You mean if I pre-order it, I'm not going to get the phone to possibly the 21st, when then someone who didn't pre-order can walk into the store and get it on the 14th? He says, that's exactly right. That doesn't make any sense to me. Someone's got to explain that. Why would you? The whole idea of pre-ordering is so they can get an idea of how many want it on that day, and you should have like that day or X amount of days to come claim it. So I didn't pre-order. My son and I are going to go to the AT&T store when they open at 8 o'clock. We'll get there a few minutes early. Hopefully there'll be, you know, not too big of a line, and we're going to get our phones. I don't understand that. That process makes no sense to me. They should take orders for X amount of hundred, whatever, you know, a couple hundred, whatever they're going to allocate to the pre-order. And then those people should be able to walk in at any time over the weekend and be able to pick them up because they pre-ordered. That's the whole idea. I don't get that. That makes no sense. I'm just going with what they told me. A reminder, I host the Windows Tips and Tricks SIG at the Philadelphia Area Computer Society, and the next meeting is Saturday the 15th, and that's in the Community Center above the Willow Grove Giant Store. And it starts, my session starts at 1:15, and the topic for next Saturday is portable applications. You know I love them, and I've done past shows a long time ago. We're also going to talk about simple networking, and then we're going to have some Q&A. So looking forward to that, and if you can get down and join me, we're going to have a lot of fun at the Windows Tips and Tricks SIG. A couple consulting stories. Now, you've heard me talk about my semantic woes with a client. Well, I have a client with the semantic endpoint protection, but for some reason, the console password, the administrator password, no longer worked. And we're like, I can't believe this. Why can't we get in? A little Googling, and I was able to come up with, in the semantic forums, and I'm going to have the links in the show notes, if you ever have to reset the endpoint protection password, you can go to wherever the software is installed, whatever drive, go to Program Files, Semantic, then a folder, Semantic Endpoint Protection Manager, and then a Tools folder. And there's a little bat file called Reset Pass. Double click it, and now you will be able to log in with the default password and the default login. Default login username is admin, and default password is also admin. And then you'll be prompted to change the password. Well, once I did this, I couldn't get in because it said the administrator account is locked. So keep in mind that if you've been trying several times and trying to get in, the admin account is locked for 15 minutes. So I found that in another article where, what do you do when the admin password's locked? You've already reset it. You have to wait 15 minutes. I waited and then got in and no trouble and was able to change the admin password and get in. So I figured I would share that. Because hopefully you will, if you run into that with a client or yourself, it'll save you some time and some aggravation. Had a client that we did a migration from one hard drive to another. They were a Windows Vista Premium, Home Premium, whatever they call it, system. And this was, oh man, almost a year ago that I migrated because the hard drive was going bad. What we did, we put the original hard drive in a box. I labeled it and put it aside. I don't know how I missed it, but there were 10 gigs of pictures that were not copied over. And my client was, Mike, these pictures aren't here. I said, you know what? Let me come back. And they had another punch list of some things to work on some of the home systems. They have 6 computers on their home network. So I go over there last week, and I brought with me my device that can read SATA drives, and it's a little docking station, and I'm going to have a link with my Amazon link, so you can purchase this for like $30. It's a docking station that it takes power and then a USB port, and you literally just take the SATA drive and drop it in the dock. I carry this in my trunk in case I'm ever faced with this situation. I said, no problem. We're going to look at your old drive, and I'm going to get those files. So I brought the docking station in. We hooked up the old drive, and I don't know how I missed it, but I went right to their profile pictures, and there they were. And in just a couple minutes, I was able to copy all of the files, got them restored. My client was very happy. If you are replacing drives, you have a drive go bad, you always have that situation where you may not have grabbed every single file that you may need. And it's always good to have a device like this around if you got several systems. It's inexpensive, and it's good to have up front before you have the problem. So if you are in a situation where you could be replacing drives or updating drive, it's very nice to have a device that you can just plug in and plug any SATA drive into. Now, I also carry a cable with me that can do the older IDE, but we're getting to the point where we're seeing less and less of all the IDE drives, and it's all SATA. And you can put a net of not only the big 3.5-inch, but you can also put the little 2.5-inch SATA drives from laptops in this device. I highly recommend it. If you're in the business doing repairs, you certainly want to use this. I've had a bunch of home office networking setups. I've been getting more and more referrals for home networks. Really nice. Nice work, because you treat it just the same as an office. And I've even had one little office that a user needed to set up. I got a great referral where it's actually the consulate to Poland in an area of in Philadelphia, where they report to the main consulate in New York, and they have this little satellite office that's set up in an area in Philadelphia. And I was honored to be able to set them up with, you know, they needed a laptop, they needed a printer, and just to set up a nice, functional, small office so people can come in for whatever services and help that they need. And that was easy to spec out and set up. If you're doing any kind of repair business, any kind of consulting, you want to have access and recommendations that you can that can fly right out of your head quickly. For the good and for the bad of all of the HP printers that we talk about, they are easy to get hooked up and running, and they do work. I always recommend the HP OfficeJet Pro. You always can get a good buy at Staples, or I'll send them my Amazon link to get something. I recommend for notebooks, if they want to go really, really, really cheap, then it's going to be like an HP notebook from Staples when they have sales. Or, not that money's no object, but if they want a more robust and a more stable laptop, a little more durable, I like the Dell Latitudes. And so I always have a recommendation. But you want to be prepared to be able to quickly respond to quotes and recommendations for equipment and hardware that you feel comfortable with, because it's going to help you get more referrals and more recommendations, because now those people are recommending me to others, and now this is how I'm building out the business and taking care of new work that's coming down. Just keep that in mind. Now, speaking of computer businesses and computer repair, Bryce, who runs TechNibble. And you know I love that site. Always, you know, always recommend it. Bryce has a new update to the computer business kit. And there's a few new functions that I want to go over with you. His new update, version 2, includes 30 legal and business documents, over 30, 37 marketing templates, list of suppliers in the USA, UK, Canada, and Australia, list of computer recyclers. It is unbelievable. The forms have that he has updated look so professional and so great. You have work orders, engagement form for home user, an engagement form for the business user, a backup checklist, reformat checklist, wireless and internet settings, a computer pickup list. I've had to use that, and I don't even have a retail store. A tune-up checklist. And then if you're in the office and you do have a storefront, a check-in sheet, a computer drop-off form, asset tag, on and on. There are so many forms that are redone, and he's added more, and it's a great deal, and I am honored to be an affiliate where I will have links on the front page of my website where you can connect. And until November 4th, if you are interested, you want to take advantage of a great discount for just $79 until November 4th, you'll be able to pick up the kit. After November 4th, it will be $99. So you want to, if you're even teetering on thinking of needing this kit, you want to get it now to save the money. You will really, really thank me for recommending this kit, because there are forms that I use in my business, and not all of them, and that's the idea, because depending on how you are setting up your computer repair business or consulting, you know, some of the forms you may already have your own. Like, I have my own lists for certain things, but there were forms that I, just by having them, I would have never done that myself, or giving you ideas to think about to have forms to track stuff that I've let go, that I was not tracking. And now I've become more organized. So if you are in the consulting business, computer repair business, this is a must kit. Let me know after you get it too, and give me some feedback. I know Bryce will respond with any feedback, any suggestions, and he's just a great guy, and I am so glad to support his business kit and his great website at technibble.com. How about some voicemails? The first one, and this is from Rich on the passwords.
Hi, Mike. This is Rich near Seattle. I just got done listening to show number 372, in which you were talking about storing passwords. And I wanted to bring up one other point that I think would be worth including in a show. That is, once you store your passwords in a secure way, no matter how you do it, make sure that your next of kin know how to access those passwords. I use LastPass, and having thought to do that, I printed out a list of my passwords to store in my safe and showed it to my wife so she could be aware of it. And she looked at the list that came out of LastPass and said, there's no way I can use that list and figure out what it is that, what passwords I need to use to access things. So I actually redid the list, starting with the printout that I got from, or the spreadsheet that I got from LastPass, and edited out all of the things that she didn't care about or wouldn't need to know, but made sure to give a clear list of all of my financial banking passwords, shopping online passwords. We update that every few months and store a new copy in our safe so that if ever she needs it, she's got access to it. Thanks for your show. I really enjoy it. I listen to it every week, although sometimes delayed by 2 or 3 weeks, which is why I'm calling you about Joe 372 now. And talk to you later.
Great recommendation, and boy, was that ever timely, considering what I just went through last week. Something that I've done, because my wife is not as technological savvy as needed for my passwords, I made sure my son Ryan has the capability of all the passwords. And I've always been worried about that. What if something happened to me and I am self-employed? And what about all my clients? So I'll go a step further, not just passwords, but think of all the other information that you need to have saved. And what I've done is listed out all of my clients and their contact information. And as a matter of fact, on Thursday, I had Ryan, I asked him, I said, Ryan, the first 4 names on the list, call them. And one of them's Carrie Holzman, because we were supposed to do a show Thursday night. And so Ryan called a couple clients that I was visiting and a couple lists. So I actually have this list that he's talking about, and we had to actually put it into action last week as I was out of commission for a couple days. It's not just, God forbid, if you passed away or something, but what if you're disabled or in the hospital and you can't get to everything? And some, you know, you may need people that need to be contacted that your spouse doesn't know. Big clients, customers, maybe people at the office. Put a list together. It's always good to have. And I want you to think about not just that, but all the other things. An example, I have Ryan, my son, set up as someone who can post on my blog. Now, he doesn't, but if there was ever an emergency or problem where I can't communicate and I can't get to the blog and blog, Ryan will blog for me and will update you. So if there's ever anything happening, if you don't hear from me, you will be hearing from my son at miketechshow.com. If there's anything going on where I am not in a position to be able to podcast, he will keep everybody updated. So now, keeping in this theme with the passwords, here's another voicemail from Nigel.
Hey there, Mike. It's Nigel from Brisbane in Australia here. I was just listening to your show 372, where you first brought up the idea of having a show dedicated to having a password-protected file to keep all your passwords in. Just thought I'd respond to that. Don't know if I'm too late because I'm a few shows behind, but I thought I'd give my contribution in regarding that that field. I'm Windows XP. I used to use FineCrypt, F-I-N-E, because what I prefer to do is have a file, just keep my passwords in a text file and then encrypt that text file with at least like AES encryption, and that way I end up with a single file which I can throw onto a USB stick or my laptop or whatever, and just decrypt it whenever I need it. And I liked that one because it actually gave me the option of having a self-extracting file. So it gave me an executable encrypted file. When I went to Windows 7, that utility wouldn't work, and I wasn't able to find an equivalent. So I went to a utility which I think is just called Encrypt, but I wasn't able to check. And that just gives me a file with a different encryption, different extension, which is encrypted. And you actually need the utility to decrypt it. It's not self-extracting. That's all I wanted to let you know about. So I'll be interested to hear your show, what conclusions you come up with, if anyone has an alternative to that, especially one that gives you a self-extracting file with AES encryption, that'd be great. Thanks a lot for your show. See ya.
That's a great idea for the self-extracting encryption. I know it was confusing. Some of the links, he followed up with an email to me after he sent the voicemail. So I will have links to the software that he's talking about. I like TrueCrypt when it comes to encryption, and I have lots of clients. As a matter of fact, I wanted to rest this weekend and not have anything to do except for the show today, and then hit the ground running with all my clients Monday. And since I had to cancel Thursday and Friday all my clients that I was visiting, I'm going to have more work this week than I've ever had. And I got to be careful, and I got to pace myself, and I'm going to make sure I get to everybody. Well, tomorrow I literally have to go to an office and start the whole disk encryption process with TrueCrypt on a replacement system where I'm replacing someone's computer that they need the encryption. I have dealt with and have talked about encryption because I have clients that if their system is lost or stolen, even a desktop, we're not just talking laptops here, which are obvious, you have to have that encrypted, but they cannot have their system possibly fall into the hands of someone that could get classified information that would compromise customer data because they are in the financial services. So I have to make sure that these clients are FINRA compliant and all the alphabet super compliance. And it's something that I always worry about and take care of. And TrueCrypt is approved for whole disk encryption. And I've done shows on talking about that, but maybe not to the detail. And if there's something like that you want me to do a specialty show just about encryption, I will do that. I know I am absolutely going to be doing that as a topic for the Windows Tips and Tricks SIG at the Philadelphia Area Computer Society. And remember, I am going to be recording those. So look for them to be posted in the future to YouTube so you will be able to view, because I know a lot of you are not in the area to be able to attend those sessions, so I do intend to record them. Got some more voicemail. Let's keep it going. And this is from Paul in response to my Outlook question that I had from a client.
Hey, Mike, this is Paul from San Antonio. In your last show, 376, I believe it was, you mentioned a question that was posed by one of your clients regarding the ability to automatically include a BCC address in new email messages, but not all of them. And there's two solutions that came to my mind, one of which is the technically correct answer regarding Outlook, while the other is a more simpler option that I think will work best. In Outlook, you can actually create a new email message and then save it as a template. Any content you enter into the body of the message will be saved for reuse in the future. And so are the two CC, BCC, and subject fields, whatever you put in there. After saving the template, you'd have to remember to open it instead of a new blank message using the traditional options. But you can find detailed instructions on this process at bit.ly/outlook-templates. That'll take you through a step-by-step. So while that solution works and is the technically right answer for Outlook users, you may find it a bit much to open the new template each time you intend to create a new message that requires the necessary BCC address, especially when you forget to do so and then realize your mistake after completing a lengthy message. In most cases, it would be quicker to simply enter the BCC address manually. For this reason, I recommend the second option, which is a custom mail-to hyperlink. This is the type of hyperlink used on web pages to allow visitors to automatically open up a new blank message in their default email program or service and address it to the website owner's appropriate email address. What many people don't know, however, is that the mail-to link can be customized to include more than one recipient in the to field, one or more recipients in the CC field and the BCC field, and even custom text in the subject field or body of the message. More information about the types of customization available and example code can be found at bit.ly/custom mail2. When you follow that, you might get a page that warns you from Bitly about proceeding, but you can go through that. I guarantee you it's a safe site that I link to. Custom mail2 link code can be entered as the destination in a new desktop shortcut or even added to your personal custom home page or intranet page at work. When you know you need to create a new message and BCC it to the addressee in question, simply click on that mail2 link and you will get the result you desire. Of course, you'll still have to remember to do this before creating a new blank message the traditional way. Otherwise, you'll find yourself doing a lot of copying and pasting once you realize your error. However, at least the process of generating the email form is now cut down to a mouse click or two compared to the 3 or 4 step process of opening the template in Outlook.
That is a great idea. I never realized you could customize the mail2 hyperlink in that detail. Now, he gives 2 bit.ly links. The first one does not work. I tried that, unless it's, the site's down or there's a problem. The second one does give you a warning. So here's what I'm going to do. In the show notes, I'm going to clean that up and bypass the bit.ly link and go right to the site. So you'll be able to get to that, where it will give you all the detail on how to customize that mail2. I think that was a great tip, Paul. And that's the one that I'm going to implement for my client to help him with what he's trying to do, is have a way to only sometimes to automatically bring up a new email message and have the BCC filled in with his secretary. And he wants it only on certain messages. So if I have a little shortcut on his desktop, that's the mail2 link built the way this website describes how to do it, he could just double click on that. Bang. That's the message. That's the fastest way, I think, to handle this problem. And it's a great creative solution. That's why I love doing this show and putting out questions like that. And getting back to the passwords for a second. When we had those couple shows, I've been getting suggestions all along. And rather than have one big show dedicated, you're getting those password suggestions on how to store them and encrypt them along the way as they come in. Because one of the things that I do realize, not everybody is up to date on every show when I put it out. And there's lots of listeners. I mean, there's thousands of listeners that are a few shows behind. And it takes a few weeks to respond. And what I'll do is continue to sprinkle those responses in on the future shows as we go forward. You may find ideas for passwords on across several shows. Here is another voicemail from Paul on LDAP and the fax machine question.
Hey Mike, Paul from San Antonio here, and this is the second message I had in response to show 376, and it refers to the question you had from a client regarding LDAP and use for the fax machine. The most common use of LDAP is to provide a corporate-wide address book for employees, sort of like a digital employee directory. Some corporate IT departments will simply allow LDAP access to the user database stored in Active Directory, like you mentioned. However, others will manage an entirely separate database of contact information for each employee. Other than the basic contact information for each employee, they might even include org IDs, employee IDs, office locations, immediate supervisor, and other company-related details. Outlook and Thunderbird both support the inclusion of LDAP address books, and Thunderbird even allows you to download that address book to a local folder for offline access, which is very useful for users of portable Thunderbird because they can then access that database when running Thunderbird off their thumb drive at home. In this particular case of LDAP access from the fax machine, this type of directory won't be a much help unless you can constantly send faxes between office locations on a large campus or remote locations. for small businesses, this isn't much use unless you create a separate LDAP database with the fax numbers of vendors, clients, and other third parties that they may need to contact. I just don't see the benefit of LDAP support compared to the number of fax numbers you can store locally on the machine, since the majority of your recipients will be located out of the office. Another issue is the fact that each employee may have a different set of third parties they often send faxes to. For example, a temporary agency employee may have to submit their weekly timesheets to their parent company's office via fax. A contract specialist may have to fax a contract to a client for signature. An accountant may need to fax a form to the comptroller's office, et cetera, et cetera. Each of these individuals will have different contacts they may need to fax at any given time, and on a regular basis even. And they probably already have all those contacts in their Outlook contacts folder or Thunderbird's address book. So my solution is to ditch the physical fax machine and go with an email fax service like MyFax or something similar. Most small businesses are good to go with a basic $10 a month plan with MyFax, but you can also opt for any of the slightly more expensive plans if you require a large volume of sending and receiving faxes. Overall, you end up saving money anyway because you get a free 800 fax number that's toll-free. You can give it to people, and you can stop paying for a dedicated fax line, not to mention the money you'll save on toner and paper used by the fax machine. Even if you're faxing from a multifunction machine, you'll still save on printing faxes because you only have to print out faxes that truly require a hard copy. As far as sending faxes go, each employee can simply attach a file to a new blank email, address it to the proper recipient, and type a short message in the body of the email. The service recognizes the address the message is sent from and automatically converts the email itself to a fax cover page and the attachment to the actual fax itself. This way, everyone can simply use their existing contact list to send out and receive faxes right from their own workstation. When a fax is received, it is converted to a PDF file and delivered as an email as well. But you can also log in online and view your faxes there too. I believe this is the simplest solution available while helping cut overhead costs and reduce paper waste at the same time. That's all I have. Mike, thanks for the show. As always, keep up the good work, and I look forward to calling in again in the future. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Paul. Great ideas on the faxing and a replacement for having an LDAP database. I'm going to add on to that. If you are a real small business like myself, I like eFax. It's free. And if you don't want to pay to have your own number, your own area code, they assign you one. So I have, it's a 206 area code. Who cares? It's free. And I put this on my business cards. I will get a fax, and it will be an attachment in an email. And now I have that fax automatically in electronic form. Then for outbound, I just use my multifunction machine with a shared splitter on my regular phone line. So this way I don't have a dedicated line, and I can just fax out. I don't have a lot of faxing needs. So I don't want to get involved in a monthly fee. Now, if you're in an office environment, like he suggested, it's worth paying the money for a MyFax. I'm going to go one step further. A way to replace a centralized LDAP database, use a shared Google address book that you share with everybody in your office, and you will be able to use that for all of the shared contacts. Now, me, Claudius, in the chat said fax is fading out. It is, but it's there. I have business-related functions that, I kid you not, they only deal with a fax, because I don't know why they can't have email. You're still finding government agencies and other, I guess, city and those type of places that can only deal with fax because they are not connected for email to be able to receive email from the outside world, maybe. because of the function or what they're doing. I know it's hard to believe, but that's, you know, when you're dealing with companies like the IRS or something like that, that they still deal with faxing. And you need the capability for that rare thing to be able to have to fax out. You better have that capability. And then the flip side, what if someone wants to send you one and you're not ready? So now what you have to do is you don't want to have to say scramble to be able to receive a fax. And that's why I like using eFax. It's free. They give you a number. Nice to have. With this, I was going to get to some email, but we are way long already for the show for tonight. I want to remind everybody to use amazon.micnation.net for all of your Amazon needs. Spread that link. You can also remember it, miketechshow.com/Amazon. That'll take you to Amazon, and anytime you are purchasing something, from no matter what it is, doesn't have to be electronics, anything, I will get a small commission, and it helps support the show. And I so appreciate all of your support and assistance. I really, really do, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much. With that, I have some special closing music. I am a member of the Pearl Jam Fan Club and just received the vinyl fan club release where they have two special songs on, yes, real vinyl. That's what Pearl Jam believes in when they you get your yearly songs on vinyl. So this is converted to MP3, and it's the song Falling Down. And the only way you can receive this is being a member of the fan club. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Thank you.
Falling Down, Pearl Jam, and I will have a link to the 10 Club where you can take a look and see if you want to become a member of the fan club, because that's the only way to get those songs. All right, that's it for today's show. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. Thank you so very, very much. I will see you regular time next week on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.